Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Technological advances have always influenced art. Think synthetic dyes or the invention of photography. Now artists are diving into the realms of nanotech, genetics, and artificial intelligence. And MIT, a leading research institution, is leading the way in the synergy between art and science. Leela Kinney is Executive Director of Arts Initiatives and the Center for Art, Science, and Technology at MIT. Leela, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Leela, MIT recently hosted a workshop on frontiers in science, technology, and the arts. And one of the things that workshop kind of focused on was new materials and the way those are being used and built upon by artists. Can you give us some examples?
I'd love to. Yes, it was actually a symposium, and it was in conjunction with this launch, both of the new Nano building last fall, which is the largest facility of its kind in the country to work on nanotechnology, and also of the new Stephen A. Schwarzman College of Computing. So let me tell you about one very interesting thing that was presented in the panel on existing collaborations. So this was a collaboration that recently took place among MIT, Microsoft, and the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It was a hackathon where the Metropolitan Museum made its digital collection, the API of its digital collection, available to explore and a desire to sort of discover how these online collections could be made more accessible and used for interesting new developments in learning, perhaps. So one of our distinguished visiting artists, Matthew Ritchie, who's kind of well-known in Boston circles, anyway, he and a graduate student in CSAIL, the Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab, did a project where they took the Met's collection and used GAN, a generative adversarial network, to explore relationships between different objects in the Met's collection that would allow users to understand the sort of space between objects, their similar features, and generate new objects, which is why it was called the Generist Studio. And that, I think, that kind of exploration, which will ultimately become more user-friendly, of a museum's entire digital collection has very exciting possibilities.
So, again, what does that actually mean?
It takes trained neural networks, that's what they're called, and you run a lot of information or imagery through them. It looks for features, you know, features that are similar or different, and it produces something that's in between the two. It's actually two different networks pitting one against the other. That's why it's adversarial. That's why it's called adversarial. It's a little bit maybe confusing, that particular term. But everybody is very excited about this because they can learn to mimic, you know, any sort of big data set, right? But then you put one in relation to the other. And so people think that this is, you know, like the way the brain makes connections, the way you and I, because we're humans, are really good at idioms and metaphors and things like this. This is perhaps one of the ways to make machine learning not be just rote and repetitive and sort of, you know how people are so afraid of AI just embedding our prejudices in code or something. So this is something that's different from each of the huge data sets that are put in relation to one another.
How does that actually manifest itself for, I guess, users, not even viewers, right? You're actually saying, okay, start with this object, now show me similar things. How does that work as an experience?
What they did was they took, they made a sort of projected map of the Met's collection. So like, let's say we're going from the Middle Eastern, let's take some three-dimensional objects, say pots or so forth. So let's go from Greek to Middle Eastern to Cypriot or so forth. And the GAN selects identical or similar features, and the visitors can explore by manipulating themselves the map, and they can then see new images that are generated from the similar features of those Met image.
Leela Kinney, we were talking about this workshop on or symposium on frontiers in science, technology, and the arts, where computing, like you've been talking about, was one of the main focus areas. And then the other one was new materials. It was in part, the symposium was in collaboration with MIT's new nanotechnology center. How is nanotech getting involved in art, or how is art getting involved in nanotech?
Well, that is to be seen. We're going to develop, we hope, a series of residencies and explorations of the new nano facilities once they're really fully up and learning. But the interesting thing about nanotechnology, of course, is it's making two things. One is it's making visible things we could never otherwise see. And the second is that it's able to manipulate materials on this subatomic scale so that you create all kinds of new properties and characteristics. So I'll give you one example of an artwork that was created, again, by one of our visiting artists here at MIT, working in collaboration with faculty and colleagues here, and it was called Sandcastle, where the artist Vic Muniz came in and worked with Marcelo Correo, who was then a graduate student in the Media Lab and is now a lecturer in the Department of Architecture and an interaction designer. They took a drawing of a sandcastle that Vic Muniz had done, and they etched it on a grain of sand using an electron microscope. Then they re-photographed it and blew it up. So it was a kind of perfect melding of the imagery, the sandcastle, and the actual material that it sort of inspired, if you will, the drawing to create a kind of new work of art that in and of itself showed this amazing kind of ladder of scales. There's another example that I might give you that involves spider webs.
I think I've heard about this project. Yeah, a larger-than-life 3D spider web and potentially something about sounds and vibration involved?
You're absolutely right. And it's an installation in the Nano building and what they called their immersion lab right now, and it's also a live performance. But actually, it goes back to 2012 and the Berlin-based artist Tomas Saraceno, who was our inaugural visiting artist with CAST and has had a range of collaborations here. Among the most important was with Marcus Bühler, the head of civil and environmental engineering, who had himself worked on spider webs for some time. Of course, civil engineers are so interested in them because, you know, they're amazing structures, you know, kind of 3D structures yeah. without scaffolding in space. The actual protein in the spider silk has amazing tensile strength as well as elasticity. So wouldn't it make a great artificial building material? So Marcus had worked on that forever, and Tomas had done large-scale installations based on the morphology of spider webs. I first saw one at the Venice Biennale in 2009 called, I think, 12 Billions. Why was he interested in that? Because when physicists and cosmologists talk about the origin of the universe, they often use the metaphor of a spider's web for what it might have looked like just after the Big Bang. So he was very interested in this. And no one had ever tried to map or make a model of a three-dimensional spider webs. Yeah, two-dimensional orb webs, sure, but not a three-dimensional one. So he developed this amazing scanning technique. He actually got some black widow spiders into his studio.
Yikes.
I know, but Tomas loves spiders, and he's actually made me get over my fears of them. His whole studio has a whole floor, you know, where there's a spider keeper there because he works with these amazing co-workers, he would call them, who make these beautiful sculptures and installations based on this. Anyway, with some technical people and arachnologists at a university at Darmstadt, he developed this scanning technique. So he comes to MIT. He shows these scans to Marcus Bühler, who gets very excited about him. Marcus had meanwhile been developing a mathematical model of spider webs in order to understand the stress points and, you know, how they held together. Because, you know, when you stick your finger in a spider web, even a simple orb web, the whole thing doesn't fall apart. It's an amazing architectural, yeah, you know, construction. So anyway, they started working together, and they developed a new scanning technique, a new mathematical model, and then Marcus and his research team developed a way to sonify it. There's a couple of scientific papers on this, one on the scanning technique, one on the actual sonification technique coming out soon. Marcus talked about this in that symposium. But then Evan Zaporin, who is the faculty director of CAST and a composer, worked with several collaborators, and they did a live performance installation based on that mathematical model of the web. So they actually performed inside a cube which had projections of the mathematical model of the web on the outside. And as the graduate student and researcher in Marcus's lab, Isabel Hsu, manipulated the actual mathematical model, both Evan and his collaborator, Christine Southwark, would improvise with those sounds while Ian Hatwick was sort of doing a live sound mix of the whole thing. It's quite extraordinary. And the installation now in the Nano Building is a kind of sonic wow. landscape of that. It can be both performed live and as an installation that has the projections and the sounds of the sonified web. We call it an interspecies collaboration.
Leela Kinney is Executive Director of Arts Initiatives and the Center for Art, Science, and Technology at MIT. Thanks for a little tour of the frontiers of art and science at MIT. Thanks so much for talking with us, Leela.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. We're already thinking about Pi Day coming up on Thursday. I'll be starting the day with a nice 5K, otherwise known as 3.14 miles, before moving on to the really fun pie. Let us know how you celebrate. Share your photos of pies, 5Ks, and pie-inspired arts and activities on Facebook or Twitter. We're Living Lab Radio. Happy Pi Day, everybody. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.